Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Zach Ebrahim grew up as the son of a convicted murderer and terrorist, a man responsible for the assassination of a prominent rabbi, and who helped plan the bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993. Despite years of exposure to his father's message of violence and hate, Zach Ebrahim made a choice to take a different path in life. His new book is The Terrorist Son, which is the story of how Zach came to renounce his father's views and devote himself to a message of peace. Again, the title of the book is The Terrorist Son, A Story of Choice. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Zach Ebrahim to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
What brought you to want to tell this story? There is the change, which and the choice, which we will talk about in a moment. But telling the story and to a large audience, what brought you to that point?
Well, you know, one of the main reasons that I decided to write the book was because I wanted to give people some insight into what it was like as a child being exposed to this kind of extremism. But I also wanted to share the experiences and the lessons that I learned from those experiences that eventually took me away from that ideology.
And you grew up in this country. You grew up in Pittsburgh, correct?
I was born in Pittsburgh, and actually I moved 20 times by the time I was 19, so I've been all over.
So what were those early years like? At what point did you realize that your family wasn't like the other families that you were dealing with?
Well, you know, my earliest memories of my father in particular was of a very kind man. He had a great sense of humor. He was very engaged in our family. It wasn't until I was about 6 or 7 that he started to become more radical in his views. He began spending time with a group of men that would eventually be involved in the bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993, and I subsequently wound up spending much of my time with them as well.
It was in 1990, you were 7 years old, when your father, El-Sayed Nasser, shot and killed the leader of the Jewish Defense League, and your life changes radically at that point.
Yeah, very much so. That night and for several weeks after, I wasn't really sure what was going on. I remember my mother waking me up in the middle of the night and telling me to grab whatever clothing I can and to throw it into a sheet because we were leaving. It wasn't until, I'd say, probably about a month and a half later that I was waiting in line to be frisked at Rikers Island to see my father that I realized that things were very different.
And meanwhile, you're a shy, quiet kid, and none of this is like you. So there's all this fanaticism going on around you, and you're the polar opposite.
Eventually, I would become the shy, quiet kid. You know, for the most part, I had a normal childhood, so I'd say I was, personality-wise, I was, like most kids. I think because of the instability and the infamy that my father brought to our family name, that maybe made me a little more insular. And because we moved around so much, I was always the new kid in school. And, you know, he was the breadwinner, and my mother was left to raise 3 children alone by herself. And our financial situation was often unstable. So we didn't live in the best areas. I didn't go to the best schools. And I think all of those things contributed to my being a little more, being the quiet kid in class.
The older you grew, the more you started to understand your father and his acts. At what age are we talking about, and when did you start to put the pieces together?
Well, after the assassination of Meir Kahane, many people tried to justify my father's actions by saying that it was just one extremist killing another extremist. And as a child, my father had maintained his innocence, and I tried to hold the image of who I thought he was in my mind. It wasn't until after the World Trade Center bombing and 6 innocent people were killed and over 1,000 people were injured that I realized that there was no excuse for the sort of, actions that he took.
You're 10 years old at this point.
I was. And he maintained his innocence throughout and was initially found not guilty of the assassination. After the World Trade Center bombing, the assassination was found to have been a part of the larger conspiracy involved with the attack, and that kind of helped me to understand a bit more of where his ideology lay.
How were you personally impacted and ultimately persecuted for the crimes that your father committed?
Well, immediately after the assassination in 1990, my family received many death threats, death to the children of Al-Sayed Nasser, and that's why we moved around so much initially. Soon after, many people knew who we were, and many members of the community, both Muslim and non-Muslim, shunned us because they didn't want to have a connection with an extremist family. So we were persecuted in that sense. But more so, the impact of his actions and the way they radically changed my family's life and the environment in which I lived played a huge part.
When it came to your relationship with your mother, how much of this could you talk about with her?
She tried her best to shield me from a lot of the news coverage and that sort of thing. I think, frankly, she was doing the job of a good mother trying to keep her children away from all of this terrible news. And again, because my father had maintained his innocence, she presumed that he was innocent and didn't want me to think that he was this terrible man that he was being portrayed as. She was an incredibly strong woman, and frankly, I feel very lucky that I had her in my life because she kept our family together when I think many people wouldn't have been able to stand up to the pressure. And she also taught me lessons that I was able to take later in life and use to shed this radical ideology, lessons like don't judge a book by its cover and treat people the way that you would like to be treated.
As you started to enter adolescence and ultimately adulthood, you realize these wrongs, and it starts to become more than just an ideology. You start to talk about it and almost preach it, right?
Preach my father's ideology?
No, peace.
It was a very long process because I think for a very long time I tried to hold the image of my father that I remembered as a child as being, the kind and loving man in my mind rather than this person that he had become. And I held that image for so long and then eventually realized that, maybe I didn't love him at all. Maybe I didn't know him or in fact that I hated him for what he had done. But I realized that if I wanted to try to make something positive out of these experiences, that I was going to have to try to channel that anger into, a message of peace.
When was the last time you talked to your father?
My family ended our communication with him when I was about 16 or 17. We changed our names and we moved and stopped communicating with him. The first time that I ever gave a speech publicly was about 5 years ago at Southwestern University in Texas, and I was on the cover of the Philadelphia Daily News that morning, and by the time I got to my hotel room that night, there was an email from my father's lawyer saying that your father has been trying to find you for many years and would really like to be in communication with you, and frankly, I was so freaked out by the email that I never responded to it. About a year later, I got an email from the Bureau of Prisons saying that an inmate, my father, would like to begin communication with me. And obviously, I'd thought for a very long time if I'd even want to be back in communication with him, but I ultimately decided that I did have questions for him, and I wanted to let him know how terribly his actions impacted our family, and so I accepted his communication. We emailed back and forth. I thought that would be the safest way to communicate. And when I entered it sort of naively thinking that I would ask him these very deep questions that I had thought about for a very long time and he would give me his answers and I would have some kind of revelation. But really what it boiled down to when I asked him why, you would choose your family or choose this extremist ideology over your family, he basically boiled it down to it was all of God's plan and I'm no longer a Muslim, and he tried to explain to me that, the reason that I had so many troubles or was going through so much trying to absorb all of these negative experiences, that if I just became Muslim again, that would solve all of my problems. Ultimately, that wasn't a very healthy conversation for me, and so I decided to discontinue contact with him again.
You write about this in the book, but how did 9/11 impact you?
Well, I think it impacted me like most Americans. I was living in Florida at the time, and I just remember my mother running into my bedroom in the morning and saying that a plane had crashed into the first tower. And I walked into my living room just as the second tower was hit. And like many Americans, I was, you know, very much in fear and shocked by what I was seeing. And unfortunately, any time an event like this happens, the first thing that pops into my mind after thinking of all of the people that could potentially be injured or killed in this sort of attack is, I hope it's not a Muslim, because I know how how difficult it is. This image that we have of Islam can often be distorted by these terrible people, and I just hope that it wasn't the case.
You write in the epilogue of the book that one of the many upsides of not speaking to your father is that, quote, I've never had to listen to him pontificate about the vile events that took place on September 11th. He must have regarded the destruction of the Twin Towers as a great victory for Islam. And he has since said that he supports peace and not the killing of innocents. So is that worth anything to you? And ultimately, is that one of the questions that you wanted to ask?
It was. I wanted to know how he may have changed in the 20 years that he had spent in prison. It was very difficult, though, when in communication with him, to decipher if what he was telling me was the truth or if it was something that he was telling me just because he very much wanted to be in contact with me. That was one of the difficulties of communicating with him, was understanding how genuine he felt.
Did you ever feel as if you were betraying your ideals by speaking to him?
No, not at all. I thought that it was important that if he didn't know, that he did know that, you know, how terrible his actions affected his own family. You know, if he paid no mind to the innocent people that were killed in the attack in 1993, that perhaps the way he affected his family making these terrible choices, maybe that would be something that would make him feel, you know, some sort of emotion.
The subtitle of the book is A Story of Choice. The choice that you made to talk about this and to become such a spokesperson for peace, what do you hope that we get from your story? What do you hope people understand that they can add to our discussion about terrorism?
Well, I think the book is a glimpse into what it's like being raised in that ideology, and I wanted to show people the experiences that I had that took me out of those beliefs. But not only that, I wanted to explain that if someone like me, who was exposed to this distorted version of Islam, who could be exposed to this sort of extremism, could come out promoting peace, then what does that say about the vast majority of Muslims in the world who are never even exposed to this sort of radical ideology?
The name of the book is The Terrorist Son, A Story of Choice. It is a TED original. It's published by Simon & Schuster. Zach Ebrahim, I thank you very much for spending time with us. A great pleasure.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is The Terrorist Son, A Story of Choice, published by Simon & Schuster. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.